you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
3, 2, 1.
Heard a lot of complaints.
Yeah, you're about to hear one now. Get off the phone!
No, I... I oh, God. Oh, no. COVID! It's just a matter of time, folks. We could track you down. You know it. We all know it.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show. Very gloom and doom today, I guess. For Thursday, December 23rd. Merry Christmas from Ben. It's brought to you by SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, and Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for all things there is to know the city of Chicago, where to go, what to do, what to eat, what to drink, what kind of pot to smoke, and so much more, including columns from our very own Ben Jarofsky. Chicago Reader, ChicagoReader.com. Subscribe, and if you want to help out this program, you can. ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky, J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Yes, that's billion with a B.
It is Thursday, December 23rd, and this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, the long-awaited return of the one, the only, Delmarie Cobb. And now your host.
So some of you know that the Mayor of Phoenix and I had a little bet.
Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Eric Zorn has COVID Thursday, and here's why. Eric Zorn has COVID. We'll get into that. By the way, D, very gloomy day. You're not kidding. Very gloomy day here in Southern California. Delmarie Cobb has joined us. I love when my guests show up early. Very gloomy day here in Southern California. It's raining. There was a song that was popular back in the 70s called It Never Rains in Southern California. Do not believe that song, ladies and gentlemen. It's gloomy and doomy here in LA, and it's raining. So you're lucky to be in Chicago, whatever the weather's like. Before I bring on my good friend Delmarie Cobb, our guest for today's show, I just want to give a shout out to Eric Zorn. He's a columnist, used to work for the Tribune. Now he's a freelance columnist and a good writer, strong writer. I just read his latest column. He talks about how he has COVID. He got COVID. So I want to give a shout out to Eric. Hope he's feeling better. His family, everybody in his family got COVID. And he had this line in the story where he said, everyone's going to get COVID. Everyone will get COVID. And I think he's absolutely correct. I'm like, you know me, D. I'm pretty much like walking around in like hermetically sealed hazmat suits since we left the studio back in March of 2020. Can you believe it? March of 2020. But this current strain is no joke. So stay safe and sound, everybody, as we headed to the Christmas times. And get vaccinated. That, I mean, good God. I have so many friends who have COVID, my dear friend Vincent E. Norman, hope you're feeling better, in the hospital with it. So got people, my friends who have COVID who've been vaccinated are in a lot better shape than my friends who have COVID who weren't vaccinated. We'll leave it at that. Eric will come on the show tomorrow. We're going to do a bonus interview with him to talk about COVID and his thoughts at the end of the year. All right. Without further ado, I'm going to bring on my dear friend Delmarie Cobb, political strategist, and my partner in crime in the ill-fated attempt to convince the U.S. Senate not to confirm Rahm Emanuel as ambassador to Japan. And I will never tire of this topic. I think Delmarie feels the same way. So we're going to talk about it for a little while. Delmarie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Oh, so first of all, are you okay? Do you have COVID?
No, I haven't had COVID, and I'm so glad that I haven't. So I've done everything they've said do, vaccines, boosters, and I'll do whatever else they say do.
Well, before we get into ROM, since I mentioned COVID, and we will get into the ROM talk. Del Marie and I were on the T. Boo Buchanan show together on VON the other day, and we were just that was just a warm up. but before we get to ROM, because I think ROM is symbolic of politics in this country at this time, and his confirmation, very cynical, but we'll get into all that. Del Marie, I got to ask you something that I didn't tell you I was going to ask you, but it just popped into my head. I had dinner last night with an old friend, actually one of my daughter's old friends, and he was telling me that so many people in his family are not vaccinated. He is vaccinated. And I'll just say this. He is a black millennial. And I've now talked to black people and white people who haven't been vaccinated. And I have theories about the difference and the reasons stated for it. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this. In your humble opinion, what is the difference between the resistance that black people have to getting vaccinated and the resistance that white people have to not getting vaccinated? And what are the similarities? It's almost like a high school essay I'm giving you here. Write that in 500 words starting now.
I feel like that. I got nervous. Oh, my God. I'm getting graded. But I can tell you Donald Trump, I mean, really did a job on this country in terms of COVID-19 and people having faith in the science. You know, now everybody, which is what I just find incredible, everybody is an expert on COVID. And so, you know, when you hear, what was the football player, Aaron Rodgers, say he's listening to a radio talk show host, that's who he's consulting with. I mean, that just shows you how crazy this is, that people are willing to believe anyone but the experts, and everybody is their own armchair expert on this particular disease, something that nobody knows anything about. We're all learning on the fly. And so why wouldn't you listen to the people who do this for a living and have done it forever? This is what they do every day. And so I just don't understand any of it, except, I mean, I know for a lot of black people, it's about the distrust. And that has been bandied about. And why now? That was my question. Why are we suddenly talking about Tuskegee now, when we've taken all these other vaccines? Polio vaccine, we took two different versions of them growing up. We've taken flu vaccines, we've taken every other kind of vaccine, and Tuskegee never came up. But now suddenly Tuskegee is looming large, and we don't trust the medical world. Then for white people, I think it's about making a statement. They're going to make a statement. And this is their statement. And when you hear some of these people talking about, they get COVID and then they say, well, I didn't believe it. I heard a woman the other day, her husband died. She got sick. She died. They died a few weeks apart. They had just had a baby. He died first. One of the last words she said to her friend was, I thought it was a hoax.
Yeah. Wow.
And my question is, so do you think that all these people have died? Do you think somebody's lying to you that all these people have died? That 800,000 people have died? And you think that's a hoax? I mean, why would anybody play that hoax on you? I mean, what is it about you that somebody is going to play that kind of hoax? So, I mean, I just find the whole thing confusing. I'm a fitness buff. I do, you know, jazzercise, I do dragon boat racing, I ride my bike, I walk, I've done 10 marathons, and I'm not a doctor person. I go once a year for an annual checkup, but I was knocking the door down to get the COVID vaccine.
I Let's stick with this for a while because you gave me some fuel for comments. Your 500-word essay was just a starting point. First of all, I did not know you ran 10 marathons. Let's just not let that one escape. That's pretty impressive. Before I like move on, I did not know that about you. It's 10 Chicago marathons or just 10 marathons total around the world?
Around the world. I actually walked them, and my last one was in Berlin in 2011.
Good.
So I did, of the top five in the world, I did three of the top five, Chicago, New York, and Berlin.
Wow. You walked the New York Marathon?
Yes, I walked them all.
See, that's how I would do it. I would walk it. I'm not running it. I'll walk it.
Right. It's about six hours, 15 minutes.
Yeah. Take your time. You know, they shut down the city. No rush. They're not doing anything anyway. But let's go back to the white reaction as opposed to the black reaction, and then we'll get into the black reaction. I do believe you. I think you're right. I think it's a political statement. It absolutely is a flexing the muscles. It's an unwillingness to want to believe that the COVID, the pandemic, is legitimate. And it stems from the fact that embedded in their brain is this notion that somehow or other the whole pandemic was cooked up by liberals and evil Democrats, probably the Clintons. They're going to blame it on the Clintons in order to sabotage Donald Trump. And I've heard this from my friends of the MAGA persuasion. Don't have a lot of friends of the MAGA persuasion, but I have a few. And so follow me on this one, Del Marie. The economy, as they say, was cooking. Donald Trump was a shoo-in for re-election. COVID comes. He's forced to shut down the economy. There's unemployment rises, and the Democrats use that to defeat Trump, even though they don't admit that. They got it two ways. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They won't admit that Biden beat Trump, got more votes than Trump, but they say that the COVID was used to beat Trump. So figure that one out, Del Marie. It's an internal inconsistency in their logic. So I feel as though that's where it stems from, a very political motivation to sort of just like almost as a defense of Donald Trump. What's your thoughts about that?
No, and what's so crazy about that part of it is that Donald Trump actually had an opportunity to be a hero in terms of COVID. He could have been an absolute hero and probably been reelected because of it. But because of his intransigence and his decision to absolutely view it as somehow being weak and emasculating him, that wearing a mask somehow was equivalent to his manhood, that is the reason he lost. He could have been a hero. Yes, it was under him that they found a cure or a vaccine for COVID. He could have used that to the highest, to the hilt. All he had to do was talk about, let's be flexible, let's go with it, this is changing, nobody knows anything concrete about this virus, let's just be flexible. Because there was a period, as you mentioned, from March 2020 to Memorial Day of 2020, when the country shut down, or the world shut down, that people would have done anything anybody told them to do. People believed at that point, and they were like sponges. Whatever you tell us to do, we're going to do. But then he just decided, you know what? This isn't real. I'm going to talk about bleach. I'm going to talk about light. I'm going to talk about everything. But what I should talk about, I'm going to discredit the one man who in the world knows about virology, and I'm just going to discredit him, and everybody else is going to know more than him, and even the Mr. Pillow Man. So yeah. I mean, it's just crazy.
To your point, when you were talking, I was sort of flashing back to the early days of the pandemic, and when the first protests that I recall against shutting down the economy, against wearing masks, took place in Michigan. I remember this. Mm-hmm. And a horde of people descended on the state capitol in Lansing in Michigan. Mm-hmm. It was a very bizarre collection of issues that they strung together. There was some guy with a Confederate flag. Like, what? Why are you bringing a Confederate flag to a anti-mask rally? Guys with guns, you know, mm-hmm. they sort of Second Amendment thing. And then, of course, there's the signs that are really strange. You got to be like Freud to figure it out, because it's all this Hitler references and Nazi references, but they're generally aimed at the Democrats. And it's like, you know what they said, that old line, the lady doth protest too much. You guys are like, for people, you're protesting that the Democrats are bringing in Nazi-like orders, but you kind of really love making these references to Nazis and putting swastikas on flags. Just saying, you know what I mean? And I think Donald Trump saw that, and he didn't want to lose those people. And I've been thinking about this for a while, like how the fringes of the MAGA movement controls Donald Trump. He just gave that, remember that speech just a couple days ago in Texas, I think it was, with Bill O'Reilly? Uh-huh. And he mentioned he got the booster and people booed, and he was devastated by it.
Right.
I think you're right. I think it's like he go back to his wrestling days. He wants to be the macho MAGA guy out there. And he can't let anybody, he can't let like this fringe group look like they're out MAGA-ing him, if that makes sense. Your thoughts?
No, I agree 100% that this is all about, in his mind, and I think it has something to do, well, obviously, he's got arrested development. I mean, obviously, he's a little boy in so many ways. When you listen to him, his actions, all of that, he's like a little kid who never grew up. And he just somehow, his inferiority complex is tied to his masculinity. I mean, and even when he was running, you know, when he was talking about the little hands and then how many wives and how many children and all of that, for him, and that's why he said, I told people when he was saying, you know, make America great again, he was saying in code, take us back to a time when not only people of color knew their place, but women knew their place. That's what he was saying. Because in his mind, women are supposed to be barefoot and pregnant to some degree, which is one of the reasons why I think he and his first wife didn't make it, because she wanted to be as important as he was. And she saw herself as an equal, not as subservient.
By the way, I'll just add this one little asterisk to what you said. Women are supposed to be barefoot and pregnant. I firmly believe, I have no proof of it, that Donald Trump, in the course of his life, has forced women to have abortions. I believe that. I have no proof of that. I don't know about his love life. But that's why when you said barefoot and pregnant, I just thought about, I don't know if he wants them pregnant in his house, if you follow what I'm saying, in every instance. But that's the life he lived in the 60s and the 70s. So,
No, but that's who he was appealing to. No, I don't. You remember, he was pro-abortion.
Yeah.
Because he's not a real Republican. He saw that as his path to victory. Yeah. And he decided to appease the lowest common denominator. Yeah. And that's who he went for. And the people who he believed, because I really truly believe when he said, I love the uneducated. He said that. And I believe that's what he meant.
Yeah.
And even when he was talking about COVID at one point, I never will forget, he was saying, we've got to have, instead of herd immunity, he said, herd mentality. And I was like, and that's what you really want.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me. Remember, was it Nancy Reagan who said, all you wonderful white people? Remember that back in the 80s? All right. Now let's move over to Black resistance. And you said something that was so fascinating. I want you to go on a riff about it. All of a sudden, everybody's talking about the Tuskegee experiment. You're so correct, Del Marie. I mean, it's like in a way, Black people have been gaslit too.
Exactly. No, that's exactly what I see. And I've said that to my friends over and over. I'm like, how did this suddenly become the most important topic in Black, in the Black community is Tuskegee? I mean, given my age, I've been out here a long time. Nobody was discussing Tuskegee. I mean, I know all about Tuskegee. I mean, of course, it was a terrible period. What happened to the Black community? And yes, there's many things like that that have happened to the Black community throughout history, but it never stopped Black people from seeking medical attention. And so to suddenly talk about this, I said, do you understand that there's a reason? I mean, first of all, I don't trust people that much to believe for a minute that suddenly this has reached the kind of heights it has reached in terms of Tuskegee. Yet when the vaccine became available, white people were knocking Black people down to get it.
Yeah.
It's like, put the two of those things together, and wouldn't you say the conspiracy is the fact that they're talking about Tuskegee? I mean, that's the conspiracy. So I agree with you 100%. I feel like we are being gaslit.
Well, I'll go one step further. I don't know if you had conversations like this, because I've used the line that you just did. I try to stay away from arguments with people about the vaccine at this point, because it is to a certain degree pointless.
Right.
But so I've had conversations where I've said to somebody, well, if it's so bad for you, why are white people rushing?
Right.
Why are all the wealthy white people, and particularly it's like a class thing, you know, the richest white people in the country, Donald Trump got it, for goodness sake. Okay. And the response, I'm not making this up, on some levels is, you don't know if everybody's getting the same vaccine. I think they have a vaccine for white people, and I have a vaccine. They have a vaccine for Black people. And I mean, my mouth drops, Del Marie, because if you've gotten the vaccine, you know what it's like, an assembly line. Particularly with the first stages of the vaccine, everybody is just marched into a room. You got Black people, you got Asian people, you got white people, you got Jewish people, you got gay people, you got who knows who. You get what I'm saying? And the person just comes through, boom, boom, boom.
Right.
It's like, it's, you think it's that sophisticated? Where, okay, we have a Black person there, give them the Black person one. You know what I mean? Right. That's just,
no, I agree 100%. And I mean, that's where I find it so crazy, because that's been my argument. In the very beginning, when COVID vaccine was made available, because Channel 2 did a story on me, because I was like, wait a minute, why is it that I can't get the vaccine? And every place I go, it's booked, it's booked, it's booked. And the people who were getting the vaccine on the South Side were white people who had never been on the South Side a day in their lives. And all of a sudden they found the South Side to get a vaccine. And I'm like, are you wondering about this? They're breaking our neck. So if the vaccine for Black people, if there was a vaccine for Black people, then why did all the white people from Glencoe and Evanston and Skokie and Winnetka come to the Black neighborhood to get the vaccine? Because wait a minute, that was the Black people's Black vaccine.
Now they got even in the Black neighborhoods, they got a special batch for when white people walk in. Uh-oh, the white people coming in.
Go to the back.
White people vaccine.
Go to the back and get that vaccine for them.
No, Del Marie, people have lost their mind, and it's a level of craziness that I don't think I've ever seen such mass insanity. You know, I think part of it, obviously, is that I've never lived through a pandemic. Now we're heading into, good God, we're going to be starting the third year of it pretty soon. It's just something we live with. I was just talking at the outset of the show. I don't know if you heard it. Eric Zorn, the former Tribune columnist, just wrote a essay where he says he has COVID, his whole family has COVID. And he said that pretty much he's just got to come to face to face that everyone will get COVID at some point. It just, if you go about the regular world, you know what I'm saying? Unless you just, if you're hermetically sealed in your house, obviously you're not going to get it. But so I think that adds obviously to the insanity of our time. But I've quite never seen a level or degree. Can you think of any moment in history? You and I pretty much cover the same ground.
No.
Where people have been this crazy?
No, I've never. And I mean, and the idea that, I mean, even what they're talking, asking Joe Biden right now about, you know, did you, were you optimistic? Did you miss something? So-and-so. What if another variant? The bottom line is, he said from the beginning, and so did all the experts. And he's listening to the experts. He's not an expert, and he says that he's not an expert. He said if 75% of the nation got vaccinated, we would be able to return to some semblance of normalcy.
Yeah.
And yet we're not. So the, what you're seeing, the outbreaks and the variants and all of those things, that is a result of the fact that we have not listened to the experts, and 75% of the nation is not vaccinated. And you go to, I think we're at 60% or 66% or something like that. And if you go to some black neighborhoods, it's, and some white communities, it's even less than that. It's 25%. Well, of course, you're just waiting to get it then. You're just tempting fate.
Yeah. We'll move on to Ron, but I just, when you were talking there, I just thought back to Trump's speech, and you began by saying he could have been reelected if he'd done the right thing. And I think about that so much with politicians, and it really applies to Ron with Laquan McDonald too. We'll get into that.
Mm-hmm. But
politicians invariably do the wrong thing, or in many cases do the wrong thing, because they're afraid that if they admit to XYZ, they'll get in trouble. So in order to avoid a tough decision that could have some instantaneous blowback, they do the wrong thing, if you follow what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Trump is really in a trick bag on this one, because he really does want credit for the vaccine having been created under his watch. He wants credit for that. And yet how can he legitimately take credit for that if he's the leader of a party that's urging people either not to get the vaccine or to do whatever they want?
Right.
Because the vaccine really only works, Del Maria, if everybody gets it. You get what I'm saying? So it's like,
he could have taken credit for it. It happened under his watch. I mean, and that's the other thing that you hear all the time. Well, it just happens. They just developed it so too fast as compared to what? Because you're obviously a scientist, and you know how long these things take, right? Because I'm just talking to them crazy at this point. Then if they talk to me crazy, I'm going to talk to them crazy. Because I'm like, I don't want to even hear this anymore. This is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, that's hilarious. They invented it too fast, says a guy who never invented anything in his life, never made anything in his life except for maybe a bologna sandwich.
You probably can't boil an egg.
All right, let's move to Rahm Emanuel for a moment, and politicians doing the right thing. One virus to another, right? A mutating virus. I have believed from the get-go, from the moment that Rahm was forced by a Cook County judge to release the video of Laquan McDonald being killed, I have believed that if Rahm had done the right thing, and in this case, the right thing would have been to bring public attention to what was going on, as opposed to allowing the public to believe the more or less official version that Laquan McDonald had been charging Jason Van Dyke. That was the official version, more or less, that the city allowed the public to believe. And it was totally contradicted by what was on the tape, Del Marie. Had Rahm done the right thing way back when, before, in 2014, at the end of 2014, or even at the beginning of 2015, before his mayoral election, if he had said, we have this tape that is very disturbing and very upsetting, and it, as opposed to burying the tape, burying the evidence, I believe he would have been rewarded with an astounding re-election victory. I believe the politicians have such a low regard. People say I'm cynical, Del Marie. I think elected officials have a very low regard for the public and their intelligence. And so this is sort of the prevailing wisdom in Chicago political circles from many people that I've heard this from is that Rahm would not have been reelected had that tape been released before the 2015 election. And I go, well, if he'd done the right thing, I think he would have been reelected. What's your position on this?
Well, if he had done the right thing, he probably would have been reelected. But if that tape had come out, especially in the final days of the campaign, or earlier, I should say, where before they had an opportunity to try to paint Jesus Garcia as inept, because that was their strategy, to paint him as inept, and he couldn't handle a budget. He would never be able to handle a budget of a city this size. And so that was their strategy, and as if Rahm had ever handled a budget before he became mayor. So, you know, it just depends on when that information came out, would he have gotten reelected or not. But the bottom line is, even after he got reelected and after the video came out, he had an opportunity to actually show remorse. And I don't mean the news conference. I'm talking about in his actions following all of that, that if he, you know, and I wrote a column on this about I learned my lesson when he said that at the hearing for his confirmation. And so I wrote a letter saying, well, show me where you learned your lesson, because this was in response to Joe Ferguson exonerating him, as far as I'm concerned. But show me where you learned your lesson, because you had every opportunity to push police reform, and at every opportunity he didn't. He tried to stifle it, and it wasn't until people kept pushing back and pushing back. I mean, one of the things I write early on, Lisa Madigan, when she said it needed a Justice Department needed to investigate, he said it was misguided. Those were his words. She's misguided. Hillary Clinton, the very next day, said it does need an investigation. The Justice Department does need to investigate. And then he said, oh, okay, yeah, well, yeah, maybe we should have an investigation. But it was only because of Hillary. And you can go and read that in the newspapers, in the Tribune, at the order in which that happened. Then he had an opportunity. I mentioned that Leslie Harrison introduced a 40-page ordinance for civilian oversight monitor. He sent it to committee and instead came up with COPA. Then GAPA and CPAC, they came together. I mean, they each had competing ordinances, but for an oversight committee. He sent those to committee. Ceasefire, there was an opportunity when people didn't take advantage of the home rebate, and there was $15 million left on the table, and he wanted to plant trees instead of take $5 million of that money and give it to Ceasefire, where they had a record of decreasing violence. And he said no to that. So at every opportunity following Laquan McDonald, he had an opportunity to show remorse and that he actually had learned something. He didn't learn anything. He had no remorse. And in fact, all he ever showed the Black community was disdain.
And yet, his strongest support in 2011 and 2015 came from the Black community. Let's just pause to think about that for a moment, Del Marie.
Well, I said when Daley stepped down, I was on VON and I said, you know what? We've been oppressed for so long, we don't even know what freedom looks like. And that's the problem. You know, it's Stockholm syndrome. I mean, it's just, and if it happens on a small scale, what makes you think it doesn't happen on a large scale?
All right. Speaking at WVON the other day, Del Marie and I were both guests on T.B. Buchanan's show. I'll tell you what, we were unleashed on that show. You know, they didn't even make an attempt to like put like a pro-rom guy. Did you notice that? Let's just put these two pit bulls out here. So I'm going to throw this something to you that people say to me a lot. And they usually say it with a smile on their face like they're kidding. But sometimes they say it seriously. Sometimes it's a little both. So I've been very critical of Rahm Emanuel since roughly 3 months into his administration in 2011, Del Marie. Okay, I gave him I'll give him a little honeymoon, see how he does.
You gave him more than me.
That's funny. I gave him more. Well, I gave him, it was the budget hearing. I don't want to go down this road, but it was a budget hearing he had at Kennedy King. I think it was August of 2011. And I just, I couldn't believe that spectacle. Oh my God. He was trying so hard to be Bill Clinton. He really was. Oh, I'm on a tangent here, but that first budget of his was a disgrace. But he was trying so hard to be Bill Clinton. And I don't know if you remember, well, you remember, you're a political junkie, Bill Clinton's sister soldier moment back in 1992, where he said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to criticize this black woman and then white people will be reassured somehow or other. And so Rahm did that. He started talking to this audience. Well, you have to have personal responsibility and you just can't look to government and the family. And I'm like, who? You've been spoon fed your whole life. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Anyway, so that's when I kind of went off the track. But people will say to me, Del Marie, oh, Ben, let it go. You just don't like Rahm. You hate Rahm. That's your problem. Let it go already. You know what I'm saying? And I know how I respond. But I'm curious if you've ever had people say that to you. Oh, Del Marie, just let it go already. Okay. Why you keep beating this dead horse, or just stop making it so personal. First of all, have people said that kind of thing to you? And if so, what's your response?
No, they've never said it to me, but they've said it to people who know me. And so, and that goes for Daly and Rahm Emanuel, because I talk about both of them equally as often, because I think we should not forget, because people tend to forget. And, you know, and the further you get away from something, the better it looks. And you go, oh, you know, you start remembering it fondly instead of remembering that the reason our communities look like they look every day that I look out the window is because of 20 some years of Daly and then another 10 years of Rahm. So, I mean, we have to be clear about what has happened to our community. So I wish somebody would say to me, Del Marie, let it go. And I would tell them, come take a tour of the black community. You want me to let it go? Take a tour of the black community and tell me what you see. And tell me what you see now in Chicago when what white folks were okay when crime was contained, when only black people were being killed and carjacked and robbed. But heaven forbid, it has now spilled out and is no longer contained. And oh my God, we're gonna move. We're gonna have to leave here. This is a dangerous city. Well, tell that to the 250,000 black people who have left since 2000. Why do you think they left? And it wasn't poor black people who left. It was the middle class that left. The people you need to stay in a city in order to make it function. Those are the people who left.
Why do you think they left?
Because of crime, because of schools, because of taxes and fees and fines. And because of no investment in their community. They didn't see any investment in their community. And so they saw it was only going to get worse. I just had a family that has a long, rich history in Chicago. And I was almost in tears when I realized that the whole family is gone from Chicago now. They just left during COVID. And that is Etta Moulton Barnett and Claude Barnett's family. The entire family has left Chicago. And I'm like, oh my God, this is history. And these are the people who are leaving Chicago. And I had tears in my eyes because I'm thinking, oh my God, Etta Moulton would probably turn over in her grave. Claude Barnett would probably turn over in his grave. I mean, those are the people who are leaving Chicago.
Where did they move? Where did they go?
South Carolina.
Wow.
And their kids are all over the place. So, no, it hurts me to my heart. And I see it every day.
Well, I just want to remind people that a moment of truthfulness in the 2018 gubernatorial campaign, Chris Kennedy, a Democratic candidate for governor, said that it's all part of the plan, essentially, to get Black people out of Chicago. And then he got clobbered, Del Marie, clobbered by the Tribune and Sun-Times. How dare you say that? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I definitely believe, and I've studied Chicago planning strategies for many years, I definitely believe there was an economic development plan to, and I'll just take it racial terms out of it, to gentrify Chicago. And no, that's clearly the plan, clearly the plan.
Black people say for years that they're trying to make Chicago into Paris. And where white people live in Paris and or the richer people live in Paris and the poor people live on the outskirts of Paris. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, and I've heard black people say that for years. Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening.
All right. So Rahm Emanuel was confirmed as ambassador to Japan. The Senate did it the dead of the night, or was it the early morning? I can't remember which, when they thought it was one of those things where you do something that you're embarrassed to do. So you, you kind of do it when you hope no one's paying attention.
Uh-oh. Right.
So what do you think the ultimate message that the Senate sent to the world by making Rahm Emanuel our ambassador to Japan?
Well, I don't know what the message is to the world. I guess to the world, it's this is the best person we could. You got the best person we've got. We're sending over to Japan, and you and I both feel the same way about that. Really, he's the best person in America to send to Japan as ambassador. Really, then something's really wrong if he is. And to black people, the message is, we don't give a damn about you. You know, you have one purpose. You are a commodity. We need you to turn out the vote. We need you to keep local governments going by fees and fines and all of that. And otherwise, you have no purpose. And we don't care what you think. We don't care how you feel. We don't care what message we send you. We don't care about any of that. And unfortunately, we have people in office who are black, who they go along to get along, and nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change. And the bottom line is, if you don't care, why should I care? And so they don't see black people caring. So why should they care? I cannot be more, as I tell some of my friends, what's happening to you cannot be more important to me than it is to you.
Yeah, I think I said this on the radio show with you the other day. It does remind me in many ways. I'm almost positive I said this. I've had this conversation so many times. I can't remember where I said what I'm saying. But it does remind me in so many ways of the Clarence Thomas hearings, where I had the feeling that white Democrats turned toward their black colleagues or their black advisors or people they trusted, and they go, all right, if you tell me to vote for Clarence Thomas, I'll vote for him. If you say don't vote for him, I won't vote for him. Is it safe? Oh. And I have a similar feeling that this is what happened here. And this no. just
You're absolutely right. No, you're absolutely right. That's the barometer. They take the temperature. And it's like, okay, well, you know, and then when Clyburn was one of the first to say that Rahm, it was okay. And then, you know, then the black, the list just grew. And then when the local black people here in Chicago, the Black Caucus members said it was okay, it's like, oh, well, I got cover. I got cover now. So it can't be, I can't be a bad guy because look at all the black people who are saying I'm okay. So you got a few outliers who are saying that I'm a bad person, but the majority are saying I'm a good person. And so, you know, how do you fight that?
Well, that's what they'd say is, it goes back to what I said before. Oh, don't listen to Dumb Ray. It's just personal with her. Oh, don't listen to Ben. That guy's just a nutcase lefty. He just doesn't like Rahm. Do you follow what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like they try to make it about the critics. Well, they're like a bunch of weird people.
Really a shame. And I was looking for a quote. I don't know if I can find it, but someone sent me a quote. My good friend, as you know, I was in this battle with Norman Solomon and Jeff Cohen. And we were in this battle against Rahm Emanuel. And I was telling Jeff I was giving him an example of how many things that, you know, Rahm did wrong. And he sent me this quote that Martin Luther King wrote in his book in 1967. It was his last book. And he was writing about corruption and Negro leaders. And he said, ultimately, this is the Negro leader, ultimately, he changes from the representative of the Negro to the white man into the white man's representative to the Negro. The tragedy is that too often he does not recognize what has happened to him.
Wow. Well, Martin Luther King wrote that in 1967, which meant that he wrote it after about a year living in the city of Chicago and being exposed to Chicago politics, Del Marie. I think that's where he learned the history. Because if you recall, 1966, Martin Luther King came to Chicago, moved to the West Side, and started negotiating with Old Man Daley to end poverty as we know it. And if only Daley had listened to Martin Luther King.
No. And if only these, my one issue about the South Suburban Airport and the number of jobs that we create on the South Side and for the Southland, and to have black elected officials be the ones against it. You know, you can green light every development on the North Side. You can try to throw everything you can think of at this violence. But the one thing you won't try is actual transformative development that could revitalize these communities and give people hope again.
All right. I'm going to resist the temptation to go down that path. You and I have had that suburban airport conversation many times. And instead, let's close down the show by getting out the Del Marie's crystal ball. And it's the end of the year, so let's get some end of the year thoughts and predictions, projections, fears, hopes, et cetera, and so forth. And I have two particular contests on my mind, one more local, one national. So let's start with the national. That would be who controls the House. Midterm elections are right ahead of us. The House of Representatives right now is controlled by the Democrats. Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker. That could all change if the Republicans win more seats in November than the Democrats do and take control of the House, in which case Nancy Pelosi's out, Kevin McCarthy's in, the congressional investigation into January 6th is over. Probably start investigating Biden. they'll make up crimes to investigate. There's a lot at stake with this congressional election. So what's your sense of things as we head into the new year?
No, there is a lot at stake, and that was, and I'm just going to digress for a moment, and that was one of the reasons why I was like to Biden, why are you doing this with Rahm? There's so much at stake. We are holding on by a thread, and we can't, the one thing we cannot afford is voter apathy. Yeah. We cannot do that. And the only reason you're in office is because of Black people turning out in record numbers. And yes, other people did, but the Black people saved him and his candidacy. And so, you know, to ignore us at this crucial period, because whatever progress has been made in the months that he's been in office, if we lose in 22, if we lose in the midterms, all of that progress will be eroded.
Yeah.
And that is the scariest thing of all, is that, you know, you take one step forward and two steps back, and we just can't seem to get ahead. I mean, when you look at infrastructure, Jesse Jackson was talking about infrastructure spending in 1988. And it's taken all this time to finally get a bill that would create jobs and address some of the disparities and the inequalities that exist in the country. And we can't come together around that. And the worst part about it is that you've got a Democrat who is the biggest obstacle. And so with, you know, and we can't afford a vote to lose a vote. And that's the saddest part about it. And I mean, McConnell's even asking Manchin to join the Republican Party so that they can have 51-50.
Yeah, I know. We talked about that yesterday, Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin, of course, the senator from West Virginia, is the one Democrat that Delmarie was alluding to, who is preventing Joe Biden from having some legitimate programs passed that he can campaign on. I just wrote something down when you were talking about voter apathy. It popped into my head, and this is really true. It gets back to Rahm. I do not believe you'll get one more Black voter to vote Democratic as a result of approving Rahm to Japan. You will not get, there is not one Black voter in America who says, you know what, I'm going to vote Democratic this year because I'm so happy Rahm Emanuel is our ambassador to Japan. On the other hand, I do believe you will contribute to the sense of hopelessness and apathy that is the greatest tool the Republicans have, Black hopelessness and Black apathy, that it doesn't matter. I definitely, this cynical move by the Dems contributes to that. So you will lose Black votes. I'm not saying they're going to vote MAGA. They just won't vote.
Exactly. And that's the one message that Democrats fail to receive. And I've had this conversation with party leaders over and over and over who are white. And they think I'm nuts because I keep saying to them, when you say we have nowhere else to go, what you fail to understand is that we don't go anywhere. It's not that we're going to the Republicans. We just don't go anywhere.
Yeah. Now, you would think a white person, let's say in Michigan, who is winning statewide office by the narrowest of margins would get that. I understand why Jim Clyburn doesn't get it or doesn't care. He's going to win no matter what. No one's going to beat Jim Clyburn in his district. Do you follow what I'm saying? What I mean? That doesn't matter how many deals he cuts. He's not losing.
Right.
It's similar to what Bobby Rush and Danny Davis here in Chicago. It's a really difficult task to defeat somebody like that. But if you're running statewide and you know, if you're Stacey Abrams in Georgia and you know that every vote, you need every freaking vote you can get. She should have been on the phone. You know what I'm saying? Governor Whitmer of Michigan should have been on the phone to Biden going, you're hurting me. To your point, Delmarie, do you follow me? A statewide Democrat in any state. I mean, Pritzker. Good God, we'll get into him later. He endorsed Rahm, too. The powers that be in Chicago. Pritzker did. Lori Lightfoot did. Durbin did. But, yeah, you're right.
No, they wanted to, you know, when I was in Washington about at a news conference against Rahm being ambassador, one of the questions that came up was, why is this a national issue? Why isn't this just a local issue? And that's what I said, is because Black people nationally saved Joe Biden's candidacy for the third time. He's run three times. He's never gotten anywhere. The reason he got as far as he did this time was because of Jim Clyburn and the Black community. So Jim Clyburn had all the power in the world to say, to sink this ambassadorship. That was a phone call. And the fact that people are looking at things as local issues versus national issues. I mean, that's the thing I was talking about the other day when we were on VON, is that we have got to change the way we look at things and go for the long game instead of the short game. This is the long game. And that's why the reason I was fighting Rahm Emanuel is because once we rehabilitate his reputation, we're going to see him come back.
You did say that on the, you did say that on VOA. You go, Senator Rahm, look out.
Right.
Yeah, man. No, the reporters are a trip. And I say this, I've been in this business for a long time, but they always got to play that, I'm just a reporter and I'm asking my question here. So why is this not just a local issue? The dude buried evidence of a murder. Since when is that a local issue?
Right.
I'm a reporter. I'm going to ask my objective question, my devil's advocate. Playing devil's advocate. Remember when Atiba did that to me on the show? He goes, well, Ben, what do you say to people? And I knew Atiba didn't believe that saying it, but he was felt like obliged. Well, what do you say to people say, Rob's the most qualified guy? And then I just laughed out loud. Really? Most qualified man to be about? He didn't even know where Japan was.
Right. So you're telling me that all of these Japanese Americans in America who speak the language, have history, know the culture, all of that, who PhDs, all of that, none of them was as qualified as Rahm Emanuel.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. If the Bears pick players the way we pick ambassadors, they'd be the worst team in the league. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, they are.
Hold it. Let's redo that sentence. All right. So you're not really optimistic, I guess, about the Democrats holding onto the House. Is that the message you're giving out right now?
Well, I'm praying. I mean, I know it's already hard. We know that, you know, during midterms, it's very difficult in terms of turnout. All I can do is pray that we somehow, this bill gets passed, Build Back Better bill gets passed, and people see, see the benefits of it and start enjoying the benefits of it. And that may turn things around. If it doesn't get passed, and people's lives don't change significantly, the Republicans may regain control again.
Yeah. What a frightening thought. And also, I'm rooting for a Democratic gerrymandering in every state in the union to offset what the Republicans did in Texas and Florida and Wisconsin, et cetera. So ultimately, it could come down to gerrymandering. All right. Let's close with Illinois. Governor J.B. Pritzker will be running for re-election. Right now, Ken Griffin, the wealthiest man in the state of Illinois, has pledged to spend upwards, I think I've seen quoted $300 million to any candidate who runs against him, to the Republican nominee who runs against him. He's also kind of suggested or let it be known that he's not really pleased with the candidates in the race right now, so he's trying to urge somebody else to run. What's your sense of J.B. Pritzker's chances in 2022?
Well, I believe he will probably get reelected, but I think he's going to be in for a real fight because we saw what happened with the fair tax, and that was a slam dunk. Everybody thought that was a slam dunk. And, you know, lo and behold, here comes Ken Griffin and plucks down $50 million and sinks it in the same way the Republicans did for the judge, Kilbride.
Yes.
Yeah, same thing they did with him. You know, so this is going to be a campaign of media, and they're willing to spend as much money as they need to spend to make sure that he defeats Pritzker. And the same way with, as I mentioned to you, negative campaigning stifles black voters. And there will be plenty of negative campaigning, and that's what the Republicans know. And I guarantee you that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, anything to deter black people for just, oh, guys, doesn't matter. That's what Trump did. But I'm telling you, that's what he did in 2016. You live in a hellhole. What difference does it make? Right. He never said, I'm going to do anything for you. He just said, what difference does it make?
Right. You know? What do you have to lose?
Yeah, by the way, can we just pause for a moment? You're talking about crime in Chicago, how Donald Trump, remember, he had a plan that if he was allowed to implement, man, the stuff that comes out of this guy's mouth is just so wild. I forget, like 72 hours, crime would disappear in Chicago. It was some outlandish out. I mean,
well, remember, Bill Daley had a plan, too. Everybody's got a plan. But they only have a plan if they win.
Yeah. There was a movie. He's got a plan to stick it to the man. I can't remember what
right.
it was. Del Marie, before we leave, any thoughts that you just want to close with? Any candidates you want to promote? I know you got a few candidates running. The floor is yours.
Well, of course, I am working on David Moore's campaign for Secretary of State. And I've been knowing David for years, and he's a good guy. And I think that office would do well if we had him in it because of his background as a accountant and an operations manager. And I think those are the things that you need. Plus, he thinks out the box, too. So that's my ad for him. And for me, I'm just hoping that people will get vaccinated and we get this COVID-19 and all its variants behind us so that we can return to normal, because this is the second year that I've stayed home for New Year's. My plans are to stay home for New Year's, and I am not happy about that, but I am not crazy either. So I'm not going out and be with a lot of people so that I can catch it myself, because I've been lucky, knock on wood, I haven't caught it, and I don't want to catch it.
Do you have any resolutions for the coming year?
No, my resolutions, I have a million resolutions in terms of just trying to stay focused and do some of the projects that I have that are my projects. You know, I'm always doing everybody else's projects and I never get to mine. And so I want to try to get to my projects next year. But that's my recurring resolution.
Well, maybe you should, I don't know if you have a book in mind, but Del Marie Cobb writing a book about politics would be a fascinating reading, I think. So maybe
one of my goals.
Okay. Fiction or nonfiction?
Nonfiction.
Got it. My resolution, which I've already shattered, the New Year's hasn't even begun yet. I already broke my. And it was a resolution that a guest offered up. We had a guy, Miles Konflassen, a young writer for In These Times, a radical writer, was on the show the other day. And out of nowhere, he just said, you know, I'm resolving next year to be positive. And I go, you know what? I'm going to be more positive. I'm sick of being so jaded. I'm going to be more positive. I think that I made that resolution on Tuesday. Del Marie, here it is Thursday. I think I've already.
But see, Ben, I think, you know, but I do think we're positive, because even though we talk about all the things that are wrong, we're talking about them because we know they could be better. And by talking about them, we want other people to see that they can be better and that the power is in their hands. And all they have to do is take control of the power and we could turn this around. And so I do think we're positive.
You know what? That is as good a spot as I need to close the interview and the show for today, Del Marie, because that is a positive statement. And it is kind of how I view the world, actually. Anyway, I wouldn't be doing this for all these years if I didn't think that there was a right path to go on. And like I said, to you earlier, if a politician does the right thing, be surprised. Maybe good things will happen from doing the right thing as opposed to doing the wrong thing. And so maybe this will be the year when Democrats do the right thing. I have pretty much given up hope on the Republican Party at this moment. You know, when you see Donald Trump cowering in the face of a few boos from MAGA on the issue of the booster, you know the Republican Party is in pretty bad shape, Del Marie. You know, it's...
Oh, I know. And when you see people just, you know, after January 6th, try to downplay it and pretend it didn't happen, that is so sad on so many levels. Yeah. It does not speak well to where we are as a country. But hopefully, again, the majority of people will do the right thing. And that's all you can hope for, is that the majority of people will do the right thing when push comes to shove.
All right. I'll make a resolution that I know I can keep. In the year 2022, Del Marie Cobb will be a frequent guest on my podcast. How about that for a resolution that I know I can keep? And of course, you got to keep your end of that one as well.
But exactly.
Del Marie, have a great New Year's. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for your advocacy. I really appreciate it. And yeah, stay healthy. All right.
And you too. And thank you so much. And happy holidays to you too as well.
All right. That's the great Del Marie Cobb. I'm Ben Jarofsky. I also want to thank the man, the myth, the legend, the pride and joy of Alton, Illinois, without whom this show would be possible. And as Del Marie Cobb, David Moore, and Stacey Abrams will tell you, back home in Alton, they call him Dr. D, and the D stands for DeMarvelous. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Take care, everybody.